Welcome to the Power Up Podcast. This is episode 2 of a 3-part series on artificial intelligence in the electric utility space. And once again, joining me are my special guests that were on episode 1, including Anthony Contino from SBS, Corey Burns from Beta Engineering, Josue Sanchez from Quanta Technology, Michael Bussinger from Burns & Mac, and Sean Weekly from Power Engineers. And I'm your host, Trevor Scullion. So let's get into it, guys.
You know, the goal today was really talking about, you know, balancing human expertise and machine intelligence, right? We wanted to really dig into what skills could people be looking at, right? What skills should some of the team out there working at utility companies, engineering firms, what should they really be kind of guiding towards, and what skills could they operate from? So let's kick it off. I think we got Michael Bussinger first. So as AI automates more processes, what crucial human skills will still be needed even though we have AI?
AI is going to do a great job about analyzing things, but you're still going to need a lot of, critical thinking in order to understand what's going on behind the scenes. You can't just take its output for, you know, the end all be all answer. So still a lot of capabilities to make the right decisions, understand the information and the background. If you're using it for calculations, you know, understanding what's behind it. If something fails, knowing where to go look to find, you know, the right input in order to get the answer that's needed.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, very true. My friend Sean Weekly, you want to catch up on this one? You want to add something?
Yeah.
What I've seen so far in the work that we've done is that we still have to have a human in the loop. And even with the work that's going on with these transformer models and the LLMs, I think it's still going to behoove us, especially because we're critical infrastructure, to have a human in the loop. We're going to have to really, you know, unless somebody creates an LLM, a transformer model, specifically on electrical only, you know, if we're getting feedback from, you know, Joe's grandma on how to configure a transformer, you know, because she posted on some internet forum somewhere, that's probably not going to be something we want to include in our knowledge base, right? So, you know, I think, you know, we have licensed engineers, and we have engineers that spend a lot of their lifetime getting professionally licensed and stuff like that. I think we need to rely on those people to make sure that this information is correct. And I think we need to do that for enough time that all of those licensed, I think this will be the acid test. When the PEs out there decide that they no longer need their PE license because the LLMs can do their job, then and only then will the LLMs be ready.
Yeah, well said. I don't think we can afford to have that black box solution, right? Where we can't see how it got to the conclusion that it did, right? We kind of need to see those log files and how it got there. It's not enough. We're not just writing poetry. Right, we're generating power and coming up with
the objective, right? The transformer spitting out magic smoke. That's an actual problem. That's not, you know, you got to do that. You got to handle that.
Right. Yeah, I like that. An actual problem. All right, so let's talk about our comfort level with decision making and AI and having AI kind of do some of those black box decisions for critical infrastructure. And we're going to start off with Corey because Ben's not here. So let's go to the next name on the list. And Corey, what do you think about that?
Yeah. So as of right now, I'm personally, and I'm speaking really just for myself, not wildly comfortable on the position of AI making critical decisions for, you know, critical public infrastructure. And that's something that, frankly, I think is just due to the novelty of AI and a lot of kind of really where we are in the development cycle for AI. I think there's going to need to be more guardrails and more barriers built into the AI systems that we potentially introduce for public sector facilities, infrastructure, and things like that. From two standpoints and the circumstance of just general public acceptance and willingness and comfort with that, but also the standpoint of there's still some lacking controls and variability aspects that I think still need to be panned out in some of the AI stuff. So personally, I'm not wildly comfortable. I definitely see a circumstance down the road where that does become more accepted and more widely appreciated. I think people will soon, and soon I say kind of like 2 to say 8, maybe even 10 years down the road of kind of being willing and welcoming to the notion of, hey, we have a lot of historical data that this machine is going to make decisions off of. And at the end of the day, it's not the only thing that's going to make this decision. And if it's got a life safety factor to it, i.e. if it's making sure that a blackout doesn't occur, you know, hey, we've got a comfort level to that. So currently at the, you know, if you ask me to be comfortable about using AI today in public infrastructure, like utilities, probably not wildly comfortable. But definitely building confidence.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And, you know, I think I want to lean on Sean here because, you know, Sean, I know you guys have power of pushing the envelope. And I know you've really been working on a lot of the RAG and graph and doing all this different stuff with LLMs. You want to weigh in here on letting it make decisions for you?
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what I do all day. I just let it tell me what to do.
Hence, you're on a podcast. For an afternoon.
And if you believe that, no, I'm right there with Corey. You know, it's not ready for a real-time decision. I was thinking about this a little bit while Corey was talking. You know, a lot of the decisions that get made in switching and just, you know, running the grid, I think there's a level of wisdom required. You know, experience of people actually doing the work, and computers are incapable of making a choice based off of wisdom. It's mathematics today. You might, you know, people keep talking about AGI and, you know, generally intelligent machines. But once again, you know, that's book smarts. That's not, you know, is this the right decision to make for this? I'm reminded of, what was that movie with Will Smith in it? iRobot, you know, where the robot had to make the choice, chose based off of mathematics to save him versus the kid. You know, that I would be concerned about stuff like that. You know, if my grandma was hooked up to a ventilator in a hospital, I would want somebody making the choice and not a computer.
Yeah, there you go, right? It's that the machine's never going to have any kind of human empathy at all, right? It just can't. It's one of those things that make us all human and decide to be on a podcast right before Christmas. So it's one of those things, you know. Thanks, Sean. So let's talk a little bit about the workforce, right? This is one of the bigger things that I hear all the time. In any kind of work, any kind of demonstration you do of AI, you know, if you visit a company and you talk about this stuff, it's, you know, how is this going to impact me? You know, how's this going to impact my job? And if you listen to all the marketing that's out there and you go on LinkedIn, it's going to do everything. It's going to replace every piece of the work. It's going to replace all the things that we do. So let's weigh in a little bit on, you know, how you feel that AI is going to impact the workforce. And let's keep it to our industry and not go too broad. But let's start with Anthony, man. Let's start with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, like any tool, I think AI has significant impact on productivity and efficiency for the users. You know, some of these use cases may be purely machine learning based, where we're predicting, for example, equipment failures, or we're revising preventative maintenance frequencies. But there's also a lot of generative AI use cases, right? Where there's known input and output, for which someone needs to just make the decision on the input and QA, QC and check the output. However, the work to get the output can be replaced by a generative AI program in some cases, I think. So, you know, for example, some traditional roles that may disappear or evolve or new roles that emerge. You know, I don't think there's going to be any roles disappearing immediately as AI becomes more prevalent in the workspace. But again, as trust and understanding of these tools increases, I do see this changing a bit with hallucinations being quite common in generative AI solutions. There still needs to be a human check in these, right? So not only for accuracy, but for accountability, right? So that's something I didn't hear us talk about yet here, but if you're using a customer facing generative support bot, for example, you know, you can't sue the AI bot, but you can sue the company that put the AI bot out. And for example, Air Canada was ordered to pay a customer when their chatbot gave inaccurate information. So, you know, there's a little bit more than just accuracy, right? It's that accountability aspect as well. But I think jobs that are purely input output in nature, meaning, you know, I take a set of known inputs, say a specific design standard or requirements, and I just generate a document manually, I think there will be some diminish there, as those who develop the inputs and QAQC the outputs will just be able to generate their own output using a generative AI program in that sense.
Yeah. And you know, I know you worked on kind of a SBS agent or something to answer questions, right? Instead of doing the service calls and all that stuff. How'd that go?
Yeah. So, you know, at first, the first iteration was a little bit, I don't know how you could put it. What's the best way to put this? A little bit uncontrollable, right? Because you can't control the input that people are asking this, right? I can't control what somebody asked it. It might be, you can ask it anything you want. Right? It doesn't have to have anything to do with SBS Assistant. And the assistant will try its best and generate the best outcome it can, but half the time it's just making stuff up, right? And, you know, that can be, there's a risk factor there, right? If it gives the wrong information and somebody acts on that information, you know, who's responsible for that? It's not a great, it's not a great look.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked your reference to Air Canada. Obviously, that was news up here in Toronto, right? And yeah, it was one of those, like, it gave them advice to switch flights or some weird thing, right? And they missed their flight and they got, you know, they ticketed fine or whatever. But it was, it's just an example of letting the chat bot answer where a human would normally interject. And yeah, they got sued.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely a risk there for sure.
Yeah. 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 So let's talk about, you know, how can these folks out there, how could the different companies, especially utilities, learn to harness capabilities of AI? And Anthony just brought up a bunch of good points. And do you want to add a little more before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, I do have some thoughts about that, right? I think it starts with an understanding of the limitations and expectations of AI. You know, it's not a magic bullet. Everybody, like you said, posting on LinkedIn that you can just implement AI and it's going to solve all your problems. You know, it's not true at all, right? It's a tool and it's understanding how to use the tool, right? For example, if you're building your own machine learning models from data you already have, that might be understanding when to use a supervised versus unsupervised model. Or if you're using generative AI bot like ChatGPT generally in your company, then learning, you know, how to prompt efficiently, learning prompt engineering, that's going to be beneficial to get the output that you desire. And again, it's understanding that generative AI isn't 100% correct. Hallucinations are common. Your outputs need to be verified by a human. And it's no different than a QAQC check on a design. You know, you might trust your contractor who's doing your design, but at the end of the day, it's the engineer checking that who's responsible when that goes to the field to be built.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I do want to jump in there a little bit to the roles and how people are going to be impacted by AI. I know there's a lot of concerns in general with regard to AI, with automation and, you know, oh, it's going to take my job, this, that, and the other. I'm not a believer that that's going to be the case. I'm not near term, not long term. I just don't see that being a circumstance that plays out, to be totally frank. I am far more a technology optimist than a technology pessimist when it comes to this stuff. It's a tool like anything else. If you use it, it can be your friend. If you don't use it, it can be your enemy. No two ways around that. But if you welcome it and just work to control it, as far as I'm concerned, that's the best way that it, frankly, you don't have to worry about your job gets automated or anything like that. You become kind of the the wielder of the sword of, call it AI, any technology, but specifically in this case, AI, of, hey, look, your role was X, it's now Y plus AI. That's the easiest way I feel like I can describe it, is kind of, you used to do something, but now you do something slightly different because what you used to do, that can be automated, but now you have that automated and this new role, this new responsibility, this new effort. And that's, I think where people get hung up on is, if I start to wield these tools, we'll start to just automate my job away. And I just don't foresee that really being the case in virtually any circumstance. At the end of the day, there's going to need to be someone at the back end pushing a button, a person, not a machine.
Very true. And I think that's one of the reasons that Sean is so polite to AI. He doesn't want it to come back to haunt him later.
All right.
I loved your post on LinkedIn, John. You're like, I'm just being nice to it. So when it rises up, it remembers me.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's seen, you know, Terminator. Yes.
Yeah, we should be nice, at least a little bit polite. Like, say thanks at the end when he gives us an answer. So,
tell it it rocks every now and again.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes it feel better. At least when it comes up to haunt us. But so let's talk a little bit about the role of AI in field service, right? Because this keeps coming up with scheduling and a lot of that, as you said, augmenting the work and management of workers, all that kind of stuff. You know, being able to diagnose things in the field, giving the folks in the field some tools so they could interact with some of that equipment, IoT data, you know, what's your feeling on trying to anticipate service issues before they arise? And back to you, Sean, being polite to AI. Let's pick it up there.
I guess I have a question for, I don't know how many people on the call here have worked at the utility company. So this is kind of an open question. But when I was at the utility company, I was under the impression that almost all of our clients have this big, gigantic bucket of IoT data just kind of sets back there behind some firewall somewhere, and they sort of run reports on it once a month and create a nice dashboard and put it in front of the C-level executives, and they do stuff with that data. But it's a month out, you know, it's a month after the fact. Have you guys experienced that as well?
Not personally. I guess it depends where the data is coming from. You know, there's still a lot of electromechanical relays out there. You're not going to get too much IoT data off of those. But yeah, I mean, Schweitzer relays, right? There's a lot of data coming off of those that we can use.
There are not many. I mean, I will say utilities are already implemented ADMS, especially SCADA, very well implemented in a way that they can leverage it. Using as well their repository like Pi or those kind of tools that you can leverage and build something like a dashboard. There are several utilities doing that, but it's not a lot. The same ones are the same utilities that are more or have been implementing like self-healing in the distribution side, which is kind of a smart decision, automatically transferring load depending on outages and those kind of things. But you have utilities that only do, like you mentioned, Sean, it's maybe like a once a month. Looking back, they will say, well, oh, wow, we have an issue with feeder number one, or we have issues, but was a momentary outage. Nobody know it. So only system control. So that's something else that mainly I would say the system control is the one that probably will see a lot of benefit. Especially I see it, and going back to one of your first, the second question, I think, when something happened in the system or there is something probably soon will happen, you can capture it using an automated AI model that can advise you and have a kind of a gate decision gate. Yeah, the controller can look quickly and take a decision like a go ahead, inject K bars to the system or things like that. Because there are many things that are already happening right now that are very smart, but you don't see the data. There is not an advice telling you, hey, this is happening, unless that you get in and look for that information. So
I think going back to the question of, you know, do we have AI that can predict or anticipate service issues? It's possible, right? You know, there's no reason technology-wise that we can't get there from here, except for the fact that we're not capturing the data, or we're not capturing the format, or we're not using that data for a really meaningful use case. My favorite use case for that data would be condition-based maintenance, where AI would just rock harder than Superman's kneecap. You know, I mean, if we could get a model trained up on all of this IoT data, you know, or a bunch of IoT data, just about transformers, you know, hey, if you see transformers starting to heat up, or if you see voltage drops, or if you see, you know, building up in the oil or whatever, you can send a crew out then, and you can have an AI that can notice that those readings and, you know, put a big old marker on a screen in front of somebody and say, hey, you need to send the crew, you know, that would be amazing. And in a lot of cases, we're capturing that data, but we're not using it properly. And, you know, maybe it's not an LLM thing, but just your standard AI machine learning, man, getting access to that data, you could do some amazing things.
Yeah, just purely, you know, just linear regression, right? It's not even like any fancy LLM or anything, just simple stuff, right?
Yeah. Just the math. Yeah.
Yeah, just math.
Even the visual AI capturing like the temperature dials of a transformer, sometimes that data is just converted in a transducer, but could have errors. However, the dial, I would say probably more than 95% of the time, it will be accurate. So, but you have to go to the field. You have to send somebody. In the meantime that you call a lineman or a substation technician, if the transformer is getting hot, at the time that the technician getting to the substation, probably it will be gone unless they just disconnect the transformer. So using a visual AI with another LLM, AI models, it will be especially a key factor for predictive maintenance and even live operations. And that I see it more in anything that is already available. It will be possible to just streamline it using AI and getting other benefits. If you don't have the AI, well, if something happened, well, you will be able to come back and then do an analysis of the data, but you don't want to wait for that, you see? So anything, in my opinion, that is already available, like in data or things that you can modify it, it will give the operators, engineers, and even field crews a little bit of more peace in mind. This is not new. I mean, this feeling, I hear it in the past from the conversion of the mechanical relays to the digital relays. You hear it as well when everything starts coming up related to self-healing. I mean, I still have, back in my days in the utility, remember having linemen very concerned about any self-healing. They didn't want it. They don't even want it to allow the system control to perform some operations. They want to do it. So, but there are other utilities or multiple other ones that already accept that. Because they see it, they understand it, and they feel comfortable. So I will think it will be I think it would be nothing different for AI. So,
Hoshi, something really interesting right there, and I wanted to bring it up because it was pretty insightful. Let's ignore AI for a second. Hoshi, you said that if you've got a process, I'm paraphrasing, if you know how to do a thing today, if you've got a process today, if you've got a set of data that you're comfortable with today, then that, you know, you can take that and use and automate it. You can do that not just with AI, right? There are so many opportunities to just do yo mama software development here to automate the processes that we have in our industry. And AI is just another tool in the box. I can't remember who said that before, right? AI is just it's another really cool tool that we can use. But as you said, Hoshi, if we know a process, if we have a thing, if we're good at doing it manually, then we can really automate the crap out of it.
Yeah.
Exactly. You hit the point.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think that even brings up the point of kind of the difference between AI, machine learning, generative design, circumstances, which is kind of, Sean, exactly what I think you're talking about is, look, these are tools in the tool chest that we could pull out as needed. It doesn't have to be AI. It can look kind of like AI. And we talked about this last time on the podcast, is it can look a lot like AI, but really it's not AI. It's not a statistical model that's providing responses or answers in a statistical sense. It could very well be hard-coded responses based on hard-coded inputs. And that's, I think, exactly what you're talking about, Sean, is if we have hard-coded data, information we can retrieve that we can provide hard-coded answers to, you then do away with all the concerns of hallucinations and the questions surrounding an AI and turn it into a much more structured system that looks, operates out from the outside looking in, just like AI. But on the inside, it's really just a manufactured system.
Yeah, you said something I want to expand on just a little bit too. This is obviously a podcast about AI, and AI is an important big thing today, but we shouldn't just be creating solutions with the moniker of AI. But most of the time, if we're delivering something to our users, our clients, they shouldn't even know what's happening behind the scenes, right? They should just have a sweet, solid user experience to go solve a problem. And whether it's AI or hamsters running on a wheel or
wood on gas, water
bath, they shouldn't care, right? Just slapping AI on something right now is kind of buzzwordy, right? People go buy those .AI domains just to glom onto the rush, to the excitement. But I don't care if it's AI. I just want it to work. And I think that's our opportunity, right? There's an opportunity for us to use AI as one of the tools in our toolbox to really solve some of our problems.
Yeah. And like Hoshi said, it's that early stuff, right? It's like, I mean, think about the automobile you had in college, right? That old crap box you drove to college. It had idiot light, right? When you're at oil, the light went on. You're already on the side of the highway, like you were already done. And then the automobile got a lot better. Now the computers we have kind of tell you ahead of time, right? You need an oil change or something's going on. Like, that's all we're asking for. Like, that's not AI. That's a simple algorithm to go through and just treat the data the way it has to be treated to massage it and give us a prediction. Like, that's, linear algebra. Yeah, it's not even heavy AI. But, to Sean's point, the amount of customers that we get coming to us saying, could you do this with AI? Could you do that with AI? Could you do this? It didn't even need AI. It's just giving us a little kick in the butt to get going, looking at new automated solutions, right? It's a good thing that marketing did for all of us, to kind of push the automation button, but it has nothing to do with AI,
complete just algorithms back to the core.
So. Yeah, I mean, you could still write the software, say it was AI, and just tell nobody to look behind the curtain, right?
The hamster back there, don't look back.
He's,
Like, is that duct tape? No, that's a strategic fix.
That logo looks like a like Axis. I don't know. It's, you know what I mean? Delete that. No, that's not Axis. That's something else.
That's right. That's not a cell. No, that's a snow.
That's something. It's Python with a new logo or whatever.
Yeah, that's a vector database with AI at the end, right?
I think the AI is, and I am not a computer person. However, knowing the behind the scenes of analyzing anything, even in the operation of the utility, we hit constraints in terms of the amount of data, because you have utilities that may don't have a lot of data, may have incomplete data, or you have other ones that have a lot of data and it's every whatever milliseconds bring coming in, then your tool, whatever tool you probably will develop, it will manage a certain amount of data, but have constraints. You know what I mean? Limitations. Now the AI, it streamlines that. It will manage it and will maybe do the calculations and then hard code it to your other tools that you have. And at the end, that's what you want. You know what I mean? If AI was the solution to make it work, perfect. And that's how I see as well AI bringing benefit to stuff that we already do that are automated. So,
yeah, that's great. Yeah. Okay, Wozwe. So let's move on to, like, this is a big one. And this is probably the primary thing, in our industry, talking to utilities and entering a utility company, talking about AI, talking about training on documents, talking about taking all of their drawings, all of their designs, and passing it through, some AI engine, machine learning, running an algorithm, basically extracting all the data from their designs and putting it into something else. Where does that happen? What happens to the data? So let's talk a little bit about security, and then we'll get into a little bit of kind of ethical challenge of AI. But let's start with Anthony, man. Anthony, I know you've gone through a lot of this in training your own AI and doing your kind of services. And it works really well too, by the way, that the SBS assistant that you guys created to answer questions, it works really well. I haven't asked it about, Air Canada or anything, but it does a great job answering questions on the products. So let's start with just, the security challenges you had.
Yeah. So, I mean, not specifically around the subs GPT security issues. I mean, if we want to talk about that, we can. There was a little bit of issues there where it was hallucinating, right? And we can control it to a certain extent. But, another area I think we might have challenges where challenges will arise is where your designer of the AI solution, a third party, for example, right? They could be deploying a solution for a utility or the end user where, they don't have the same intent, right? They don't have the same security requirements. So the designer's drive might be financially driven, where it doesn't match up with the utility's expectations or the end user's expectations. So again, this goes back to accountability. So whoever's deploying the system needs to fully understand its capabilities, its extent of reach within the systems where it's going to be deployed. And they should be the ones accountable for these actions taken by the software, I think. So, I think the cybersecurity will become a big concern as a black box model could easily hide malicious behavior or, intent to critical vulnerabilities in a system that are not inherently obvious as soon as you obtain the software. So, this could be problematic for areas such as distribution automation, where the breakers and reclosers are being open and closed in specific sequences to isolate faults and bring customers back online. Whoever's developing the software might not have the same, intent or ethical intent that the company who's deploying it does, right? So you could have an example where, this is a stretch, but let's say you have the CEO of the company has a mansion on the beach, right? And he prioritizes or they prioritize that his circuit comes back online before a hospital does, right? I mean, it's a stretch, but it's an example where there could be malicious intent hidden in the AI program that's not inherently obvious in the beginning when you start using it. So a failure of this system could easily be catastrophic. And transparency here, I think, is key. So, you know, especially in markets such as nuclear, you know, where profit margins are thin or really non-existent, really, at this point, over-reliance on AI systems, they could result in, let's say, a reduction of maintenance tasks in an effort to save money. However, some of those systems could be safety-related systems required to operate in the event of an emergency. And this is especially dangerous if you prioritize the wrong equipment. You reduce maintenance, you start having failures just as a result of implementing something for the sake of efficiency. There's just a few examples there in utility and the generation world that I could think of. I also think that using a generative bot is a little bit dangerous, not just for, say, what you saw with the SPS assistant coming out with information that's inaccurate, but just overly trusting what it's giving you. So when you're chatting with these bots, it's easy to just have a full conversation with a chat bot and take everything it's saying, you know, as truth of the fact. But sometimes what it's saying is not true, and these things need to be checked. And if you're making decisions solely based on what a chat bot is telling you, you could be in some hot water there. And it's easy to get caught in that trap, right? The ChatGPT bot is very confident in its answers, but very confident in its hallucinations as well. So.
Right, right. Overconfident, right?
Like, right, yeah.
It never says, I don't know, let me check. It's like, certainly.
Exactly, yeah. It's always right, right? Yeah, well, it's not.
Yeah, right. And we're going to move on to Sean, because Sean, I remember that the LinkedIn post you made, and it was talking about the co-pilot person that hooked it up and connected it to their email, and it allowed access to all their private emails and all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, those are the things you just go... Boy, we got to be careful when we're deploying anything like this.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, it's just another computer system. And because it's a computer system, you can have bugs and, or, you know, as we like to call them, features that are undocumented. You know, that was a pretty good one, right? Crawl my whole network and expose everything to everyone. That's a pretty outstanding undocumented feature. But it's not a good one, you know. So, Anthony mentioned when he was talking about use cases, it made me think of one that went back to, you know, we were talking about having a computer or having a human in the loop to make decisions, right? I don't know this for sure, but I think that when they're switching on distribution circuits, you know, we get a lot of tornadoes down here. So, if there's challenges and you got to do a bunch of rebuild, they bring circuits on based on the number of meters that are getting fed. You know, so if you're looking at a big neighborhood with a whole bunch of houses in it, a bunch of meters, algorithmically or logically, you might want to turn that on versus a small hospital that's only got 4 or 5 meters. And, you know, that's what I'm talking about, where, you know, my grandma's in that hospital and she's on a ventilator. I want her to live over someone being able to cook mac and cheese in the microwave. You know, these are things that we need to really think about. And they're ethical things that, you know, it's not a computer science degree. It's not a mathematics or an engineering thing. You really have to think about where this stuff comes into play, because it has no soul.
Right.
It's not wise in the sense of, you know, somebody over here is hurting and we need to get their power on versus, you know, get all these other meters going on, things like that. Security wise, obviously, you know, the Graph API, Microsoft Graph API for, you know, O365, that lets you see everything. Everything that the current user, you know, if I'm logged in, I'm using the Graph API, I can see everything that I have access to. And that sounds like it's secure, but what happens if the CEO's email is not properly secured and I have access to it and I just didn't know it until Copilot surfaced it for me?
Right.
You know, that's a problem. That's an undocumented feature that now I can read all my CEO's emails. That's a security thing that You know, that's why we did not do some stuff with our chatbot in Inside Power. We specifically curate data sets from our users, and we don't use the Graph API or anything. We build vector, you know, databases based off of certain, based off the same set of documents that they use today.
Right.
You know, if they go to a SharePoint site and they look through a bunch of documents to find answers to questions, we can take that SharePoint site and turn it into a vector index and let something answer questions from it really quickly.
Right.
And then they're not getting anything special. They're just getting the same answer they would have gotten faster because a computer can surface it. That those are really great use cases. We've got dozens of them on the popper. But, you know, data security, data strategy, if you're going to bring this stuff, you know, in play, man, you better look at that stuff because it's going to kill you.
Right. Yeah. No, good advice. Corey.
And then you've got also kind of the national security side of the equation that, that really presents a significant wrinkle in this entire circumstance. I mean, as you noted, and as the question alludes, you've got security and then ethical questions. And security, in my honest opinion, will be the larger of the two challenges amongst those two. And that's not to belittle the ethical challenges that are going to go hand in hand with utilizing AI or even just general automation in kind of public infrastructure side of things. But for sure, security side of things, you know, for a lot of clients, that information, whether it be drawings, whether it be just schematics, one lines, things like that, that information can't leave our company. You know, we're very much so liable for information that leaks out in any way, shape or form. So if you start to implement these really complex integrated systems that are cloud-based and things like that, you really run high risks of accidentally leaking out very confidential and sensitive information to a lot of vectors, a lot of different spaces. And it can really be hard to retrieve that information or draw the information back or say, hey, whoa, once that cat's out of the bag. You know, once that connection is made to say like a cloud-based system or something like that, there's almost no going back. That's out. It's not necessarily public, but it can quickly, you know, spread. So the security side of this equation becomes really, really complex, really quick. But the other side of the coin that Sean mentioned and Josue mentioned is the ethical side of this equation. I think Anthony mentioned it too, is very similar to kind of self-driving cars and autonomous vehicles. We run into a lot of the same ethical challenges and questions of kind of, hey, you know, your car is driving itself. Somebody falls into the road and, you know, it's either the person that fell into the road or the car next to you that you bump into and push into the oncoming traffic. You know, that's an ethical dilemma that isn't really there's not really a great answer for from the standpoint of coding. Historically, humans have managed that circumstance of, hey, somebody made a decision and results happened. And that's a human part of human nature. When you start to hard code that into written algorithms, ooh, you know, those are doozies. There's definitely a lot of ethical challenges that jump into that. And I think the way that I start to navigate the ethical challenges associated with public works or public utilities being in any way, shape or form, maybe controlled or just passively controlled by AI or machine learning systems or even just broad-based algorithms is to try to just essentially eliminate picking and choosing winners of just kind of, hey, if a grid goes offline and an AI system is determined to turn it back online, there's no winners, there's no losers, nobody's prioritized over anybody else. A hospital isn't necessarily prioritized over it. It's just what can get the grid back on fastest. So that's the priority. So working around those ethical dilemmas becomes very challenging in this space, especially when you start putting machine learning systems in place of, you know, human decision-making circumstances. And in my honest opinion, I think it, in the near term, looks much more like AI machine learning just serves as kind of an information recommendation tool of, hey, statistically, we would recommend you turn this on. And then a person behind the switch says, no, that's not a hospital, and flips the hospital switch on or something like that, kind of like to Sean's point, you know? So I do think security and ethical circumstances surrounding these are going to be AI, two of AI and just generally automation's biggest hurdles to face in this space.
Yeah, that's great, man. It's funny because you think about the way these AI models are trained, right? The majority of the models, you think of Meta, Tesla, right? Before they moved to Texas, right? It's so biased towards West Coast things. And we're starting to see now, we're kind of having a chat about it here in Canada because the Tesla Cybertruck has started to hit here. And there's been a massive amount of issues with this truck. And then, I thought it was groundbreaking. I love the design. It's completely different and everything. But now they put this thing in northern Canada and it's been breaking down with the cold weather and all the electric. It's like
these smashing the windows.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is battle tested in California. It's like, guess what, guys? Has it seen minus 48 degrees every day? I worry about that with AI, that the models are tested and trained. And it's very biased toward that kind of, so the ethically, is it really taking into account, the entire world when it makes decisions, or is it biased towards one thing? Yeah. I just found it really funny that the Cybertruck can't get out of the snow, the northern Canada. Wait, it's a 4x4 truck.
What do you mean it's junk? It loses the charge. It's that's the worst enemy of battery.
Isn't it?
It reduces the power. You can have the car 100% charge, and maybe you are in Michigan and the temperature went down to 10 degrees. Then you didn't use the car. When you get inside of the car, you will see that maybe it's 40%.
Right.
So it reduces the charge of the batteries. So it's another thing that especially people at the cold weather areas are experiencing. And
yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it's always that bias towards one area, right? If one area can control this AI training, right? How badly have we biased this thing, right? To be specific for one area. Yeah. Kind of worries me. Nothing on that part. Anybody want to close anything out? I'm going to go back and we're going to go and talk about the next episode that we're going to do. The next episode is about kind of predicting the future. So we all get to put on our, glasses and look at 5 years in the future. We'll just do 5 years. I don't think we'll even try 10, but I think as we close it out, if anyone's got any comments or anything you want to cover, now's the chance.
So you have one question about AI autonomously diagnosing equipment in the field. I just wanted to say this is something that I think we should look at what China's doing. They've had drones autonomously running through substations for years now, doing inspections, tomography inspections. So this is, I think it's something we need to look at. Maybe we could talk about it on our next episode if it's possible to do this in the United States. Personally, I don't think the union guys would be too excited about this, but it might be something that happens. They might not have a choice, really.
I was out doing one-line audits on the East Coast with one of the utilities out there. And one of the field guys made it a point that with all this the AI technology and things coming into play and being able to monitor equipment from afar, they're going to lose the ability to have somebody like him in the field that can spot a very small leak somewhere on a transformer and know that it's going to need to be replaced relatively quickly. So I'd be curious to see just how effective like monitoring with drones and things like that would be, because it's still going to miss some of the small things that a human could detect.
When we spoke earlier about automation and stuff like that, I think that this is one of those, 70-30 rules, right? If you can fly a bunch of drones through and catch 70% of the really common problems, there's value there. But you still have to have really smart people hitting the ground for the 30% of problems that a drone can't do. And I think we have to understand that at the utility industry level. We can't just slap an AI sticker on it and call it good. We can't slap a programming sticker on it and call it good. We pay people to become engineers, to be super smart, to find this stuff. I think our best bet is to take all of the things away from the engineers that they hate doing And we can do that with code and with robots and with drones and with AI. And that would be hugely beneficial and let engineers really leverage their smarts and their licenses and that engineering part to do the things that we want them to do anyway.
I really resonate with what Michael said, what Sean saying, because at the end of the day, we've got to have these people that are there and that are taking care of utilizing these tools and taking care of the stuff that we have there, the physical assets that we have there on site. Because at the end of the day, we can't just rely on these autonomous systems. Eventually, at some point, they're going to break down. There's got to be somebody there to pick up the slack that these autonomous tools can't really do. They really should just be reinforcing mechanisms to better the way that we do things. Just as Sean said, they should just be taking care of the mundane stuff and the stuff that we don't want them doing, or they're just not that good at. You know, the drone can't do, doesn't have fingers. And frankly, I don't really want it to. So it's kind of like, you know, let's make sure that the humans are still involved here. That's my take on it.
Yeah, no, it's great. We saw that, that human like robot at the Sphere in Vegas. And they had this, and it's amazing. My wife was like chatting with this thing. I think, why did they have to make it blink? Like, now you made it real. It's like, it was fine just answering questions. Why does it have to have like nails and fingers? And geez, you made it creepy.
There's definitely a point where the machine becomes too human. I still want to be here. You know, don't replace me.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And the other side of that on my end too. I know that we are closing. So thinking about the robots, it could be beneficial in the utility, especially from the safety perspective. You may want to prefer to some operation that it may be extremely dangerous, or you are doing some troubleshooting and you just need somebody to go and push the breaker. An example, you are in front of the breaker, you know what you are doing, and people make mistakes and accidents happen. Well, it would be better if the robot get hurt, obviously, or get a boom, versus obviously a person. So I can see that the same way as the drones and the robot dog that is from Boston Dynamics, people are using it for it, like inspections. But now the humanoid type, I believe you can give the commands to, hey, pull this or press this button there.
Yeah,
you don't have to sacrifice a resource, a person, at least on the most dangerous operations, and you prefer to lose a robot versus losing a life. So that, I can see that happening too.
Yeah, I know. That's a great point, right? I mean, it's super dangerous work, right? And you could have a robot doing that work for you, right? And taking that sacrifice where if it's gone, it's just like a burnt toaster. We just replace it, right? Not like a human life, though.
So. Yeah. The robot doesn't charge overtime either, so don't forget that.
It's a neat participate of an OSHA investigation or things like that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It's a
OSHA.
Yeah. There you go. Well, let's wrap up, but I want to do one more round for everybody here, and we'll start with Anthony in alphabetical order. But let's just go. So one more time. A lot of the folks listening, right? It's the SDSIC members. It's our, 2,300 peers out there that are doing design work, engineering, fieldwork, project managers. Just a little bit of advice on what they should be looking at in looking forward to AI. We talk about prompt engineering and all that stuff. What would you recommend that they really investigate in trying to augment their work using a little bit of AI tools?
Yeah, I think, the first thing again is just to get educated. You know, what are the different tools and what are the impacts of them and how can they be used, right? And training yourself, right? If I'm a welder and I need to learn how to use a TIG welder, I need to go to training. I need to get certified. I need to understand the best way to use that tool so that I can use it efficiently. And I think we touched on a little bit here, but I think one of the areas we can focus on is the solution. And what is the solution to the problem? You might not need AI for that solution. Like we said, you might be able to just use a standard Python script. You might be able to, automate it in another way. Instead of focusing on trying to force AI into every situation, look at what you're trying to solve. What's the problem? What am I trying to automate? And does AI work as a tool here, right? Should I be using a hammer or should I be using a saw, right? It's using the right tool for the job.
Corey, next on the list.
Yeah, I think Anthony hit the nail on the head with virtually everything that he just said. First and foremost, absolutely get a basis of understanding of what AI is, what machine learning is, what generative design is, all these buzzwords that you hear a lot about. Just start to wrap your mind about around them and do some of your own research when it comes to understanding exactly what these are. And go to your professional associations. I can tell you, if you're a structural engineer, the NCSEA has put together a lot of helpful information with regard to AI in the structural engineering realm. Same goes for a lot of these other professional associations, as well as there's loads of YouTube videos, almost too many. And then reach out to your traditional educational resources, universities, things like that. A lot of them currently are working on, if not already have, lecture series that are affordable, you know, remote basis, accessible, that you can learn some very basics about what AI is, how you can build some agents, how you can go about coding for whether you want to use C sharp or whether you want to use Python, you know, what your you know, recommended languages for these things are, and how to kind of get into that. And then the other thing I would leave people with the comfort or confidence of is, I know there's a lot of buzz around AI, and I know there's a lot of kind of, hey, we got to get a wrangle on AI. But if you're in our industry, the utility industry, the first thing I would notice, I definitely encourage you to get acclimated and understanding of AI, but don't feel like AI is going to come overnight. It is not going to be here tomorrow. It's not going to be controlling our systems in, frankly, a year, 2 years, arguably even potentially 5 years. You have time to get your feet underneath you and get acclimated to how you can utilize and harness AI. It's not an impossible task. Don't feel like you're way behind the boat here on everything. Everybody's learning kind of at a somewhat similar pace, some faster than others, but everybody's still learning. This is a very new technology. We are at the point upon which the dot-com boom is starting. That is where we are. We have not gotten to the crescendo by any measure. We are just getting going on what AI is and what it potentially will be down the road. So I think that's about everything.
No, that's great, man. Yeah, there's no Skynet tomorrow, right? We got a lot of time before we're going to hit that crescendo. And that was, you know, that was one of the mistakes of the dot-com boom, right? Everybody thought it was coming overnight, and it took years before we actually had a really authentic way to buy something online. And they could actually ship it short of 7 weeks and $85 to get the thing shipped. So, yeah.
That. Right, right. That's not to say don't ignore it. Yeah, you know, you don't want to.
No, no. Josue, you're next, man. You're up on the list. Alphabetical order. Let's go, bud.
Good. Now, I think it's in terms of the folks that maybe are hearing us or hearing this podcast in your air date, it's just a matter of learning or trying to list many of your processes that you are actually doing right now, trying to align those processes to how we can maybe leverage AI to make things faster or maybe easier. And obviously reading and learning a little bit more about it. And it will spark that in the mind of everybody. And little by little, I believe things in the utility industry related to AI will start taking off in a, I will say, an organized manner or an educated manner, where you feel confident that what you are doing and the result that you are getting, you really understand it. It's no different than any other technology, I will say. It's just a matter of learning a little bit more and learning how you can apply it to your process, and you will get confident with it.
Yeah, that's great advice, man. I know you've done a lot of research. You've been digging deep on AI. Yeah. Michael, you're next on the list, buddy.
Yeah, so I like to take more of probably like a team approach to it. For myself personally, I want to understand the design aspects of it. I don't think I'll ever become a huge user of AI or a programmer of AI. I'd much rather work with someone who is more knowledgeable in that space and then work with them to figure out how to automate some of those processes or utilize AI to come up with some of the solutions. So I think understanding, especially out of school, your early career people, understanding your job first and what's expected of you, how the design is supposed to be done, and then working with someone that has more of the background in AI, machine learning, you know, language models, whatever it may be, and leaning on them to code that and then work together to Sean's point early on, it's like, well, you're never going to get, like, you're always going to have a PE. They're always going to be a licensed engineer. And so making sure that you have the right people at the table to work together in order to come up with the best solution possible. I don't think it's going to be me writing any kind of codes, but I absolutely love working with the people who do it. And I think it makes for a great relationship. And I think the product turns out a lot better because it's not one person trying to learn two different disciplines. You have two people knowledgeable in their respective disciplines, and they're working together to create that one output.
All right, we're going to close out this little round table with Sean.
So I like these calls because, a lot of us have different backgrounds. You know, there's a lot of electrical engineers on here. I am not an electrical engineer. I'm a software guy, 20 years writing code. What I've learned here is that there's an extraordinary amount of really low hanging fruit in the utility industry that you could write software for, you could use AI for. And what's cool about the push here is that a lot of the bigger vendors, Google and Microsoft, you know, they're creating tooling to make it easy for you to pick some of that low hanging fruit, right? You know, I mean, it's as simple as looking at what you do. And if you've got a SharePoint site or if you've got a network drive full of documentation that you have to visit more than once or twice a week, you can turn that into a RAG vector index. Load that up in a cloud provider and have a chatbot talking about that documentation in less than a day. You know, it's almost, the jiggery pokery clicky wizard things, you know, you just go through a wizard and build this chatbot and you're rocking before close of business. Take the opportunity to go out there and find those things or reach out to somebody here at the consortium. We can point you at some things that can put you on this path and you can be learning about it tomorrow and leveraging it tomorrow. There's some really practical things that you can do to solve some really common low hanging fruit problems. And you can be in this space. You could be experts just like us by tomorrow.
You know, Sean, I still have that notebook. When I first started going to Birmingham, Alabama 15 years ago, I used to create a notebook with all the notes and things that Sean would say. Diggery pokery, Superman, B-cap, knees. I don't know. I had a whole list of all the sayings. We should turn that into an AI and have it answer.
Yes, man. It's a gift. I don't want to turn that into an AI. Then it would be me. And then you're not.
That is a gift, my friend. That's good. Well, once again, I thank you guys for joining. We're going to pick up probably third episode of this in the new year, because we kind of ran out of time this year trying to get everybody together. And the next one, we're going to talk about just AI in the future. We get to sit back and pontificate about what's going to come in 5 years from now. So that'll be a fun one as well. But I thank you guys so much. I know it's at the end of the year, so hope you all have a great holiday and enjoy your time with your families.
Thank you for listening to the Power Up Podcast today. If you enjoyed this conversation and you're not yet a member of the SDSIC, join for free at sdsconsortium.com. Be part of the community in all these great conversations. And maybe you'll be the next guest on the Power Up Podcast.